support for so-called good cause legislation, which creates a mechanism for tenants to challenge rent increases in court and prescribes the circumstances for an eviction, got its biggest boost in Albany this week as the Democratic majorities in both houses of the legislature endorsed the idea of this proposal in their respective budget proposals, with Senate Democrats going so far as to write in their resolution that they back, quote, tenant protections that align with the core principles of good cause eviction. To discuss the issue, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by State Senator James Skoufis, an Orange County Democrat who I would not consider an ally of good cause proponents. So is that a fair description of where you stand? And if so, what are your reservations about this legislation?
That is a fair characterization. I've got deep concerns, and I have for some time, about good cause eviction. And look, a lot of my colleagues who are supportive, I respect them, I respect their position, but I respectfully disagree. There are two main principles of good cause eviction. First is the automatic renewal of leases if there is no major violation of that lease, which I just fundamentally view as a de facto taking of private property. You can have someone with an annual lease, a one-year lease, a two-year lease, some amount of years lease, and stay in that unit against the wishes, against the will of the owner of that unit for 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, because the lease will automatically renew. In fact, I question why even put a year number in the lease at that point.
So what's the reason why someone might want someone out that would be a valid reason, though?
Look, a lease, in my view, is a contract. When the contract is up, both parties, if they want to, can renew, but it's got to be both parties. If one of them doesn't, then there is no next contract. In fact, I do not view the ending of a lease, the ending of a contract, to be an eviction, which is kind of what that scenario has morphed into. That's not an eviction. It's the end of the terms of that contract. So when you ask, well, what should be the legitimate reasons by which someone should not renew a contract, I don't care what the reasons are. It's their unit, and the contract is over. So that's the first principle of good cause. And the second is the price controls that have gotten a lot of attention, 3% or inflation. And look, I'm someone who trusts experts and trusts professionals in a given field, and there's been very little discussion about whether this is proper economics or not. So what I refer to, there is a survey done of a large group of economists. The group is called the IGM Forum, and they tested the question with their group of economists: do you support ordinances that limit rent increases for rental housing units? And the percentage of those economists who supported that statement was 2%. 98% were either opposed or did not have a formulated opinion. And by the way, the latter of which was only also 2%. So the vast majority of the 98% was opposed. And so this is just by any measure, whether you're an economist on the left or economist on the right, this is by any measure bad economics. And it's because price controls in housing will worsen what the real crisis is, which is a crisis of housing supply. And if you put price controls on housing, that will further impede supply. You'll have developers, you'll have landlords who will be strongly discouraged from creating more units if you're going to tell them on the other end of that massive capital project, oh, we're going to tell you how much your rent can be, how much you can charge. So those are the two principles. I have strong concerns about both of them. It was in our one house. The conference, I think it's fair to say, is quite divided on this proposal. And from my perspective, we have a lot more work to do in this space over the next 2.5 weeks.
So there's a lot to unpack there. The political issue, division in the conference, I think that's probably embodied by the fact that the actual language of good cause wasn't in the budget bills, so to speak. There was just this, support for the measure. Is that fair to say?
Look, it's leadership's job, one of their jobs, and we have a majority leader who is a master at this. It's her job to try and reflect the will of the conference in documents like the One House budget proposal, and oftentimes that requires threading a needle. That, I think it's fair to say, is what was attempted here, not referencing the bill number, not attaching the bill language, but because there is a chunk of the conference that absolutely does support good cause, making some mention of the concept in the One House proposal. So I don't know where this is going to land in a couple weeks. I know the Assembly, I don't believe they mentioned the words good cause, but they certainly alluded to it.
Assembly supports pathways to ending capricious evictions and onerous rent hikes.
Correct, right. And none of this was in the governor's proposal, of course, from January. So we're starting from a few different positions here as we head into final negotiations. Certainly, I'm going to continue raising the concerns and hope that we can have a response to the housing crisis that addresses the actual crisis, which is the supply.
So you framed the rent aspect of this as essentially putting a specific percentage cap on what landlords can charge. But my reading of this legislation is that it's not necessarily a proactive restriction like you've described, but more in the sense that if a landlord imposes a rent increase and a tenant then falls behind on their rent, they can basically challenge an eviction on the basis that their rent increase was too high, and it then falls upon the landlord to explain, you know, I had to do a 10-15% increase because I had these expenses or property taxes changed or for whatever reason, and try to convince a judge that that's valid. So what's wrong with that process? Because it sounds like you're sort of fighting a different bill.
There is certainly nuance, as you just described. I would take exception to the argument that there's some massive difference as to whether the price control is put on the front end or on the back end, where the tenant would have to affirmatively take you to court. It's not my understanding that this would only apply to situations where the tenant somehow falls behind on their payments. If there is some increase above the 3% or inflation cap, regardless of the financial circumstances of the tenant, they can go to court and say, I don't like this, it's unjust, and the legal burden is put on the landlord to try and justify why they are above the 3% or inflation cap. And you know as well as I do that depending on what judge you're in front of, depending on what courtroom you're in, this will be interpreted 10,000 different ways. And so do I view this as price controls? Yes, even though it might be on the back end where the tenant would have to affirmatively take it to court. Let's be clear. There are legal aid societies. And in fact, in our state budget, we send millions of dollars every year to support the work of these legal aid societies across the state. So it's not as if there's going to be thousands of tenants who would love to challenge these rent increases, but simply, you know, aren't going to be able to find a lawyer and can't afford a lawyer. There are going to be lawyers on standby who will be encouraging tenants every single time a landlord tries to break the cap to challenge it and go to court. That is a price control, whether it's on the front end or the back end.
So you've supported very strict price caps on rent as it pertains to people who have manufactured homes and pay rent for the property that they put their manufactured homes on. So why should those New Yorkers have greater rights or access to price controls, as you've described them, and tenants who might rent space in a building not get? Why should there be a different class of rights?
Because it's apples and oranges.
Is it?
It is. Because if you live in a mobile home park, you own your home. Yes, you're renting the small, tiny plot of land
where you live,
that your mobile home is on. But you own your home. And I think it is far more reasonable to suggest that just planting your mobile home on a tiny little plot of land, there should be some additional regulations and controls that don't apply when you are renting someone else's home. You're renting someone else's property. And so I think it's really dramatically different. I think it's apples and oranges. You are a tenant in someone else's unit that they own.
But someone else owns the land. Is there more of a difference than that? Is there
because of course? Well, so if you want me to elaborate,
please.
When you're talking about an apartment unit, there are capital expenses associated with maintaining that building. You've got boilers, you've got facades, you've got the pointing of those buildings has to be safe. And depending on what the structure of the lease is, there are utilities. If it's a manufactured home on a plot of land, you're mowing the grass and you're trying to keep a road repaved into the park. And by the way, sometimes even the road repaving is part of, there's sometimes HOAs or equivalents in these manufactured home parks. And so the expenses and the obligations of the owner are dramatically increased when you're talking about a tenant in an apartment building versus you own a mobile home that's planted on a small plot of land.
Your position on the language in the budget, is that a product of your personal beliefs, or is it representative of the constituents you serve? So I guess on this issue, are you a delegate or are you a trustee as you head to Albany?
I guess a trustee. Everything that I just shared with you are personal beliefs that I have, that I've developed after looking at the issues here very, very closely over literally years at this point. But I think if you went out into Orange County in my district and explained what the repercussions were, what exactly this bill would do to specific landlords, especially small landlords, to a macro level, the top line economic impacts that I referred to before, I do think that you would see my Orange County constituents tend to raise concerns, like I am, around this prospect. And so I certainly fervently believe in my position here, but I do think it happens to also be a reflection of where my constituents would be.
And finally, is there a version of this language that could be included in the budget that you think you could support, whether it's restrictions on how much people can charge for rent or how people might defend those increases in court, or some sort of codified list of reasons to evict that might be written down in law that you could support?
Well, certainly the last one I'm very open to, and I think that even most opponents of good cause would be open to, which is some reasonable list that is further delineated beyond the 2019 protections that we enacted and that I voted for in this space, that does enumerate the specific reasons by which someone could be evicted. Now, keeping in mind that the end of a lease does not mean you're evicting that person. The contract is up. But otherwise, yes, that I think is a fair conversation to have. Beyond that, you know, look, I think the concerns I have are pretty fundamental. And so whether it's a 3% or inflation or a 5% or inflation, I'm not going to say it's immaterial because, you know, certainly it's substantive policy and there's a difference there. But once you open the door's open forever. And so let's say instead of 3%, we went to 5%. In 2 years and 3 years, the next big push from advocates is going to be, well, we need to lower the 5%. So the door, once it's open, is, I think, poses a long-term policy problem for us in the legislature. And my preference, again, would be to address the actual crisis here, which is supply. If we have supply that meets demand, you're not going to have landlords who, once a contract, once a lease is up, are going to double the rent because there's going to be so much supply that they're not going to have a long line of potential tenants looking to overpay for a unit that they just doubled the rent on. Right now, there are no alternatives for people to turn to. That's the actual crisis.
So probably letting the state override local zoning rules would be a good way to help increase that supply, right?
Well, we have to do what you're just talking about, not overriding, but building new stock in an intelligent way. But I see what you're getting at. You're very clever, David.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator James Skoufis. He is an Orange County Democrat. Senator, thank you so much for making the time for this lively conversation.
Always a pleasure.
And for more Capital Pressroom content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.